Afternoon. Sunday morning discussion on Weekend View.
Our Sunday morning discussion, as the African Union, the AU, turned 20 this year, the debate about its effectiveness is back on the table once again. Established here in Durban, KwaZulu-Natal in 2002, with 53 African nations as members, the AU became the successor of the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, which had existed since 1963. Well, the OAU concentrated its efforts primarily on decolonization and the establishment of diplomatic relations between members. The AU was founded to advance the continent's economic development and entrench lasting peace. Now, after 20 years, has the AU achieved these goals? To help us unpack this further, we join in the line by Kabele Matlosa, who is former director in the Department of Political Affairs at the African Union Commission in Addis in Ethiopia. He's currently a visiting professor at the Center for African Diplomacy and Leadership at the University of Johannesburg. We're also joined on the line by Professor Adekeye Adebajo, a senior research fellow at the University of Pretoria Center for the Advancement of Scholarship in South Africa. And I am very pleased to be joined by both of my guests, and I welcome them to the Sunday discussion. And of course, you are invited also to contribute to it. You can send your voice notes on 0826923909 or ring us directly on 086-000-2032. Post your comments on Twitter at The Weekend View and tag me at Sebe Ngambule. Prof. Adebajo, let me start with you, and good morning and welcome to The Weekend View. An important milestone. 20 years is a nice number, of course, to reflect. But I imagine, given the dynamic and often complex continent we live on, any moment really is a good time to reflect. Perhaps just briefly, your view on high level on just what sort of successes, right, that the AU can point to as signposts of its progress since 2002?
Well, good morning to you and your listeners. I think the most important successes for the African Union is that, very different from the Organization of African Unity, the AU's Constitutive Act of 2000 allows intervention in situations of human rights abuses and also on constitutional changes of government. So military regimes from places like Togo and Niger and Egypt and Sudan have been suspended from the African Union for launching military coups until they've actually been able to get back to holding elections and being constitutionally more, at least, representative. You've also had the African Union's Peace and Security Council, which has been one of the more effective parts of the African Union, meeting regularly and working closely with the UN Security Council to try to resolve conflicts. And finally, I think the AU's peacekeeping interventions in Burundi, Darfur, and Somalia, those are the three key things I would list as successes.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring in Kabele Matlosa as well, and thank you for your time with us this morning. High level as well about the signpoints of progress, and perhaps if you can also speak to what some of the major challenges are that have for those who hold the view that the organization is not as effective and as impactful as it can and should be. What are some of the challenges that it faces that stalls, in fact, that dwarfs its potential as an organization?
Thank you very much, Zebe. And let me greet your listeners of listeners of SAFM and my regards to my good friend, Dr. Professor Adebajo, from University of Pretoria. Can you hear me?
Loud and clearly.
Thank you. I thought maybe the line is not good. Yes, I agree. I agree 100% with what Professor Adebajo has said regarding the achievements so far of the African Union. Let me just add a couple to that list that he has just tabled for us. The other achievement that I think we should highlight of the African Union is that it has managed to bring African countries together to ensure urgency and strategic leadership on various aspects of the African agenda. And the African agenda today, as we speak, is encapsulated in the Agenda 2063, the Africa we want. So I think that that's a major milestone of the AU. And finally, on the milestones, before I go to the challenges, the African Union has managed, and I think taking it from the OAU, has managed to ensure unity of the African continent across all the 55 member states. So it's the epitome of a continental unity based on Pan-Africanism and African Renaissance. I think those are the milestones that I can add to the list that Professor Adebajo has outlined for us. Mm-hmm. Now, on the challenges, I will highlight only three because of the time constraint. Three that I see facing the African Union are that, firstly, the continental body is still highly dependent on resources from outside the continent. So that financial dependence on donors is a big challenge to the budget of the Union. Mm. That's number one. Number two is that the AU, much as it's really an important continental, you know, body bringing a number of almost all the countries on the continent together, it still doesn't have the power to enforce a number of its normative frameworks at the national level, simply because it is merely an intergovernmental body, not a supranational entity like the European Union. So sovereignty always comes back to haunt the African Union. That's number two. Number three is the problem of relations between the African Union and what we call regional economic communities. And on the continent, the AU recognizes about eight of them. Mm-hmm. The relationships are not harmonious. They're not working well all the time on the basis of the principles of subsidiarity and complementarity. This principle at times becomes an asset, but at other times a liability. In the West African context, the ECOWAS, it has worked very well. In cases of, for example, how we dealt with the problems in the Gambia in 2016-2017, mm-hmm. but it has not worked that well in other regions like East Africa. We didn't handle Burundi very well in 2015, I must admit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Prof, perhaps on that same point there on the regional organizations, their effectiveness, the sort of work that should be happening at that level in order, of course, to expedite the sort of progress at a socioeconomic level that we want to begin to see, compared, of course, to what the AU is then able to do at that level. What are we seeing working then? What, in fact, could happen better? We've seen in SADC, for example, we know when there's an issue in one particular country, the neighbors feel it quite quickly, but there's often the view that interventions take a while, whether we're talking about the case of Eswatini, and there's always calls for South Africa to be louder. Zimbabwe calls for South Africa to be a lot louder, but we're not quite, I think, seeing enough of that.
That's perfectly correct, Sebe. That's the dilemma I was pointing to, that the AU's effectiveness is also constrained by the principle of subsidiarity and complementarity, where when there's an issue in a particular region, let's say Eswatini, you've mentioned Eswatini, you can mention Lesotho, you can mention, you know, others. The AU cannot intervene timelessly in a situation like that. It is left to the regional economic community like SADC to handle it. And that then constrains the AU You made a good example of Eswatini. Look how the Eswatini problem has evolved over time, and it's getting even complex and complex by the day, and the levels of violence are increasing in Eswatini, and the AU is not able to intervene in Eswatini to resolve that problem, because it has to wait for SADC to exhaust its own mechanisms of dealing with the Eswatini crisis. So there's an issue that needs to be addressed.
Sure.
In my view, I think the AU has to revisit the principle of subsidiarity and complementarity, so that the AU has more power over the RACs to intervene. You know, so you don't wait until a crisis has gone beyond manageable proportion.
I'm still in conversation with Kabele Matlosa, who is visiting professor at the Center for African Diplomacy and Leadership at UJ, as well as by Professor Adekeye Adebajo, Senior Research Fellow at the University of Pretoria Center for Advancement of Scholarship in South Africa. Prof, coming back to you, just on that question again about the effectiveness and impact of the regional bodies versus what the AU, in fact, can do.
Okay. Well, I think first of all, as Dr. Matlosa has said, you need to look at the structure of the institution. You know, the African Union is a very heads of state driven organization, and many decisions are taken at that level. The actual commission itself, which is the implementing arm of the African Union, has maybe 1,000 staff. You know, the European Union, in contrast, for example, has over 33,000 staff and actually has supranational powers to be able to negotiate trade deals on behalf of its members. It's a very different situation that we have in the African context. And I think the other thing I would say also is that many of the institutions that the AU has set up remain very weak. So you have an African peer review mechanism, which, although it has 41 members now, doesn't really have any strong powers or teeth to be able to actually take action where it sees that things are going wrong. The African Standby Force, which was meant to have been set up as far back as 2003, 20 years ago, has still not been set up. And that African Standby Force could help us to avoid improvising interventions or relying only on the UN, which doesn't always want to deploy timelessly in African conflicts. So I think it's very important to note some of the other things. And the other issue I would point to is that many of our hegemons, sub-regional hegemons, strong states that should be providing leadership because they have more economic, political, and military resources, like Nigeria, South Africa, Algeria, Ethiopia, Egypt, many of them are going through internal problems themselves, which prevent them from actually providing sub-regional leadership. But my last point is, it's not only in Africa that you see some of these difficulties. Mm. In Southeast Asia, Myanmar has also been accused of massive human rights abuses, but it's been quite hard for Southeast Asian countries to actually sanction Myanmar. And even in the European Union context, Hungary's Viktor Orban has been a concern in terms of human rights of the European Union itself. So the issue of sovereignty that Dr. Matlosa talked about is one we must always keep in mind. A lot of governments don't want external intervention, and in many cases can actually prevent it.
Taking voice notes on 0826923909.
Good morning, Sebenzile. Mr. M. Captain, I don't think the African Union, they're achieving what they promised, really. They're failing. They're not committing each other. There's too much problem in deficient African Union. Different countries, they don't see eye to eye. So nothing they achieve, really. They can talk, but they're nothing achieved. And if anybody who go to the UN, September, whatever they used to go, I mean, also is wasting money, because also UN is a part of colony. and they never achieve really. How many the royal family UK they steal from the Africa, but they never talk African Union. They have to bring back whatever they steal in UK to Africa.
Yeah, good morning. I think the saddest thing is the lack of unity in the African Union. Once again, that's demonstrated by the attack of Russia, of the Ukraine. Instead of standing together with one voice, the African Union has pussyfooted around this issue, very much sadly like South Africa, which is too weak and is too scared and fails to have the guts to have a position.
Thank you for those voice notes. Do keep them coming in. Professor, I'll just come back to you quickly before we move on. Just on, you know, with the speak of Agenda 2063, and perhaps as briefly as possible, if you can unpack, I suppose, what some of the major, I think, signposts again of progress, right? Looking at Agenda 2063 can be. We know 2023 marks the second decade of implementation, the focus of connecting the continent, physically connecting the continent, so looking at infrastructure, roads, solves for the difficulty, the existing difficulty of the movement of goods, of services, of people on the continent. How game-changing can, in fact, this particular decade of implementation be, particularly looking at physically connecting people?
Well, I think there are two issues when it comes to this kind of effectiveness. There's implementation capacity, and then there's the need for realism. You know, Agenda 2063, it's good to have a vision, but when you have a vision that's 50 years old, where the people that drew up the vision wouldn't be around to be held accountable, then you could have issues. And the things in Agenda 2063, it's things like increasing intra-African trade from 12% to 50% by 2045. You know, silencing all the guns, ending all the wars in Africa by 2020, a deadline that has passed, and things like that. And I think there should have been some kind of more realism in actually defining and identifying what the issues are. And one of the most important, I guess, aspects of the implementation of Agenda 2063 is the African Continental Free Trade Agreement,
yes,
which has come into place since 2018 and wants to do exactly what you just said in terms of free movement of people and goods. But, you know, African governments remain very, very security obsessed. And so free movement of peoples is only on paper. You know, in West and Eastern Africa, there's been progress on that, but typically African governments remain hostile towards that. And my last point is the one that Dr. Matlosa made. You need to create five very strong regional pillars in each of Africa's five sub-regions, like ECOWAS, IGAD, etc., so that this is happening in a way that is organic and natural. You need strong sub-regional pillars before you can have a strong continental kind of free movement organization.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Prof. Dr. Matlosa, just a final word from you as well about what we should in fact look forward to and hope happens over the next decade or even a lot sooner around development, particularly the economic development needs, right, of the continent that will, yeah, in fact, in your view, shift and change people's lives on the continent.
Yes, Tabi. And let me build on what Adi just said regarding the Agenda 2063. As a vision, it's a development blueprint of the continent, and it's implemented so as to bring the realism that Adi referred to. It's implemented through 10-year plans. So the first 10-year plan was 2014 to 2023, so it's ending next year, so that you are able to monitor that there is implementation. So it's not just a vision without implementation. Mm-hmm. And also, the institution itself will be accountable. The AU will still be there in 2063. So it is the institution that's going to be accountable, not necessarily the individuals who will come and go. So that's my point. Now the three major flagship projects of Agenda 2063 are, one, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement that Professor Adebayo referred to rightly, two, free movement of persons on the continent, and third, silencing the guns. Now, there are efforts in around the three flagship projects, but I must admit that on the silencing the guns, it had to be postponed. It was supposed to be 2020. That's now been postponed to 2030 because the main goals of the agenda could not be achieved within that time frame. So we wait to see whether by 2030, guns will have been silenced. Now, on the free movement of persons, that is where we are lacking. That is where the United States member states are dragging their feet. Mm. There's more progress, I must admit. There's more progress in West Africa and East Africa, as Adi said. But there's no progress. There's little progress in Southern Africa, where we're still grappling with issues of xenophobia and Afrophobia in South Africa, which is supposed to be the regional hegemon to drive the agenda.
Yeah.
So we have those challenges. And on the Continental Free Trade Agreement, we already have a secretariat in operation in Accra, Ghana, but we are yet to see dividends arising from the flagship project at the moment.
Sure. Let me thank you both for your time this morning. This way we'll have to park it, Dr. Kabele Matlosa there, as well as Professor Adebayo. Thanking you both for your time with us this morning.